normal. I thought everyone lived this way. And so I was having a wild and crazy affair with the produce manager in my store. And he paid for the drugs. And so there was a lot of cocaine. So, you know, I smoked pot every day since I was 13 years old. Alcohol was always there, but I love the drugs. And, you know, I know we're in AA, but this is my story. So, I'm the person where if we were having a party at your house, I'd be the one running in. I'd always have the bag of pot, the pipe, and then we were drinking. And then I would run around the room and say, I need $20, $20, $20, and we're going to call the dealer. I mean, that's what happens to me when I drink, is I dial up the dealer. And so this guy that had some money, he was getting divorced, and we both worked at Safeway. And one day, we were doing a lot of cocaine, and one day he came up to me, and he said, try this. He put a pipe in my mouth. And so this is in the very beginning of 1990. And he taught me how to freebase cocaine. And it only lasted 6 weeks. I'm so grateful. I only tell you this because if it hadn't been for that, I probably would have stayed out probably easily 20 more years, easily. I was a terrible drunk. I always blacked out. I always, you know, I just could never handle my alcohol, but I love the drugs. And so, 6 weeks of that, I couldn't live with it. I couldn't live without it. And I experienced incomprehensible demoralization. That's all you need to know. And I didn't know about sobriety. I didn't know about recovery, and I didn't know how to ask for help, but I knew how to get people's attention. I'd had that really good job for a long time, and that job had been threatened, by a store manager. And I had done a lot of geographics. I left the store. I was working out with that I'll go to a different store where he doesn't work. I'll break up with him. Whatever. And then I'll step out of management because that's the problem. I don't want to be a manager. You know, I just want to be one of the crew so I can call in sick all the time. And so I've been moving and driving and running around. And so I walked into the store, this Safeway store. And it was May 1990, and I just looked at the store manager, and I was totally strung out, and I just said, where are those resignation papers you've been threatening me with? And so I quit my job. I'm sure he was glad to get rid of me. And I got everyone's attention, including my sister and my mom. My sister was my roommate at the time, and she'd done her own stint with drugs. And so she called my mom and said, my mom's still in L.A., and we're in Santa Cruz. And she, you know, get on the phone with my mom. Well, my sister said to my mom, I found out later, don't believe anything she's telling you. And so my mom's like, what's the plan? You know, it's May 1990. It's May. And I'm like, oh, well, you always said, because she put herself through college, you always said that you'd help me go back to school if I wanted to go to college. And she's like, yeah, it's May. So that would be what, in September. And she's like, what are you going to do? And I had no plan. And she said, why don't you pack your bag and come down here and we'll figure it out. So none of us knew what we were about to do. So, I got down to L.A. My sister and I packed my car and we drove. And I woke up on Sunday, May 13th, 1990. It's my sobriety date. I didn't know that was going to be my sobriety date. On my mom's couch. It happened to be Mother's Day. I'm very grateful because I don't have kids. Some of you probably heard me cry. And me, I don't have any children. Oh, it's not fair. But Mother's Day means a lot to me, you know. And so I was kind of reborn. I didn't know that at the time. But my mom said, why don't you go talk to a friend of mine, that therapist. So I went to see this therapist and told her my story. I think she saved my life. She said, would you be willing to go somewhere for 2 weeks? And so, you know, I had that insurance till the end of the month, that great insurance. And so I said, you know, I was willing to go at any lengths because I wanted to get back to Santa Cruz, to the guy, to the drugs, whatever. And I think she was a really smart lady. And I think she knew that I was a drug addict and that I needed sobriety really bad, like really bad. And I was going to make some really bad decisions. And so, would you be willing to go somewhere? And I said, yes. Right. I mean, it's like calling central office. Do you want to come to a meeting? You know, just say yes. So I said, yes. And I went back to my parents and they said, what's the plan? My mom had married my stepfather by now when I was 18. And so, they said, what's the plan? I said, I'm going to go to this place. I had no idea where we were going. Here's the address. Turned out it was a private psychiatric hospital, very small, that the therapist, I guess, was affiliated. I found out later that she called my insurance. And my insurance said, we want her back in Santa Cruz. That's where she's from. That's where this insurance is, you know, started. And she's told my insurance, well, she's suicidal. Was I suicidal? Maybe. I don't think so. I don't think I was. But that was what got me in there. And so my parents, we drove out that night. And so I checked into a private psychiatric hospital a couple days after my sobriety date. And they did the intake, you know. My parents, their eyes were like, whoa, my God. And so I got sober in that psychiatric hospital, but I'm going to talk really fast and go really fast because I really want to talk about recovery. But in that hospital, it was brought to my attention that I needed 12-step recovery. And so there was a woman in that private psychiatric hospital. I was inpatient for 2 weeks, and she was probably doing an H&I commitment. I'm convinced of it, because she was not a part of the staff. But she came in, and they would say, you know, all addicts, alcoholics, room 5, and, you know, shuffle down there. And it was a first step meeting. And maybe it was 3 days a week. I still, to this day, I'm not quite sure. Was it every day? But it was many times we went down there, because it was a rotating cast of characters. There were a lot of people that would come in on what's called a 5150 hold. You might have heard that term. So, you know, they're 72 hours because they've harmed themselves or harmed someone else. They come in on a stretcher. So there was a rotating cast of characters coming into those little first step meetings. And so that woman, that first day, I don't know if her name was CJ or JC, but I think she saved my life, because she sat, you know, we're in a circle, and she sat and told her story like we do. And this is what it was like, and this is what it's like today. And she was an attractive woman with nice hair, nice makeup, and well-spoken. And her using story was like super badass, which is what I needed. I really believe, you know, if a guy had told the story, I probably would have objectified him. You know, I'm single, like I want a boyfriend, you know. So thank God, I'm sorry, I'm just telling you the truth. Thank God it was her. That God put her in my life, and that message from her. I wanted what she had. And so when my 2 weeks were up, being an inpatient, it was just me and her that one day. And she said, "What's your plan? What's your plan, Sarah?" And I have no plan. And she said, "Well," and she had the schedules, you know, and she, you know, "here's the schedules for the local meetings." You know, it's 1990, there's no internet. So here's an AA schedule, an NA schedule, and a CA schedule for this area. And she said, "Pick a fellowship, because if you don't go to 12-step recovery, you won't stay sober." Now, in AA, we say, don't ever say that, you know, just be friendly. But I needed her to do this. I needed her to say, this is what I believe. And I believed her. And so my first meeting, once I was outpatient, I did like 6 weeks of outpatient, I think 4 to 6 weeks, West Covina, California, and it was an NA meeting at night, and people were taking cakes, little cupcakes for their years. You know, it's very Southern California. Yay, everyone applauds, right? And so someone's got a year, and I'm like, oh, my God, a year? You know, and I think I had 40-something days or whatever. But so my mom and my stepfather and I made a plan. They would help me financially. I would come back to Santa Cruz, and I would go to 12-step meetings, and I would get a part-time job, and I would go to school part-time. And I'm really grateful for the foundation I was given and the blessing of that very middle-class recovery. Living in Vallejo, going to Vallejo Fellowship, I do not take it for granted today, right? That my parents could help me financially. So just some defining moments I want to talk about in recovery. When I came here, I wanted to be sober. I desperately wanted that. And no one else could make me want that, right? Like, we know that now for step one. But I'm single. And so for 10 months, I did not get a sponsor. And I was looking at all the boys in the meeting, and I was like, I want to go out with him, and I want to, you know, whatever. And so I wasn't spiritually fit. I did ask a few people, would you sponsor me? And so I took a coffee position. I found a home group. A friend of mine, her name's Patty. She got sober a year before me, and Patty was older than me. She was married. She had kids, but we did a lot of drugs together. And if Patty was going to AA, I would check out AA. So my first couple years in recovery, I went to in Santa Cruz, the NA meetings, the CA meetings, and AA. But I like this AA meeting that Patty took me to, and it's called Early Risers. And in 1990, it was up on Depot Hill, Capitola. And so they met every morning, like Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. in this church. And it was a big meeting, and there would never be enough time for everyone to share. So the way they started the meeting was, and they were all around the wall of the chairs. And so they go around, everyone said, "Hi, my name is so-and-so, and I am so-and-so. So I'm Sarah, and I was an addict." And I just want to shout out for the 12 traditions that the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Nobody said, "Sarah, you're in the wrong group. You know, why don't you go back to NA?" Thank God that people follow their traditions in Alcoholics Anonymous, because you know what? I am an alcoholic. I'm a lot of things. I have a lot of isms. But if this is Blue Anonymous, I will be blue. I don't really care. I want what y'all have. I want the 12 steps in my life, and I want the 12 traditions so I feel safe, right? So I'm going there, and so I'm 10 months sober, and I'm not really working any program, but I'm not drinking, I'm not using, and I'm going to this meeting, and I'm going to school, and I'm working. And so one day I'm at the beach with Patty. Again, I'm 10 months sober, and Patty very casually says, probably saved my life, how's your recovery going? I'm like, I'm good. And she goes, do you want to go to a women's meeting? I'm a single female. I don't want to go to a women's meeting. I want to hang out with the boys. And so she said, there's a women's meeting I go to. Do you want to go? And so I said, yes, again. I said, yes. And so we went to the women's meeting, and that was in downtown SoCal on a Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday night. And I started going there. But I did that thing where I made myself separate. Well, the women were older and they were married and, you know, I'm younger and I'm going to college. Like I spent a lot of my recovery being like, I'm not like you, right? But I want what you have. So I started working with Patty and I went through the steps and I'm really grateful for that first sponsor. But I didn't go very deep into the steps. We did them once. But one of my other defining moments, you know, I sat in those meetings. So I lived in Santa Cruz for my first 4 years. And I sat in meetings in early recovery and heard a lot of people talk about doing step 4 and 5. And they were like, yeah, when I left my sponsor's house after doing step 5, I had a spiritual experience. And like, it was amazing. And I'm sitting there going, that wasn't my experience. Is that Patty's fault? No, it's not Patty's fault. Is it anyone's fault? No. It was just my journey. It was my personal journey. But I did a lot of that comparison. Well, why am I not having that spiritual awakening? What's wrong with me? So I'm 2 years sober and, I've done the steps with Patty. I'm going to school. But what I didn't mention earlier was that I didn't know how to be a student. You know, I talked about it in my home group today. One of my three home groups in this town, Women's Solution Group. We read the daily reflections and, you know, I was told when I first got sober in that psychiatric hospital that when you start drinking and using addictively, you stop growing emotionally. You've probably heard this. And that, so you're kind of playing catch up in recovery. And so, you know, I drank and used age 13 to 26. And they told me when I was 26 and got sober, you probably have the emotional maturity of a 17-year-old. You better believe it. And I've been playing catch up ever since. And so, I didn't have a lot of emotional maturity. I didn't know how to be a student. I didn't know how to suit up. You guys taught me here how to suit up and show up. But when it came to school, I was terrified. So I did enter that community college and my parents' blessing and they're paying my rent and, you know, and I've got this part-time job, but I didn't know how to do it, you guys. And I was so scared. So I'm in my first year of sobriety. I've only started working with a sponsor when I was 10 months sober. And so I got scared and I just stopped going to school. I stopped going to classes, and when you stop going, they give you a fail, right? You know that, right? So I had a year of report cards with fail, all fails, because I didn't even do the footwork of going and withdrawing. Okay. So I get a letter. Now I'm a year sober, over a year sober, and I get the letter from the community college. Please don't come back. We don't want you, you know, because 2 semesters in a row. And I was like, oh, my God. See, I've been lying to my parents. This is what I want to tell you. So I'm lying to my parents. It's great. I'm doing great. Life is great. I'm sober. Yeah, I'm sober. And I got that little part-time job. But I'm lying, you know? That was a lot of the thing in the beginning. Like, we talk about honesty. But, like, the fear was bigger than my ability to be honest. How do I tell the people that are writing my rent check that I'm terrified and I don't know how to do all these things sober? Right? So I thought, man, the gig's going to be up. Someday I'm going to have to show them a report card or tell them I'm graduating or not graduating, right? So I went back to the college and you guys taught me that. Ask for help. Ask for direction. So I went back to the community college and I went to a counselor and I said, okay, here's my story. I'm sober in AA and I'm an idiot and this is what I did. And she said, it's no problem. She goes, here's the directions, right? Directions. She's like, you're going to write a letter and tell me everything and you're going to retake these classes. Okay. So another year goes by. I'm 2 years sober and now I've been going to school for a year full time and I have straight A's, right? We're so like that in recovery. I'm the worst. I'm the best. You know, I never know how to come in the middle. So now I have straight A's. I'm on the dean. You know, these were basic classes. It wasn't like rocket science. But I'm on the dean's list. I've like turned it all around. So I wanted to share this story really quick about my first spiritual experience in recovery. I'm 2 years sober and I need to make amends to my parents. I need to tell them the truth. The truth is I lied to for a year, but now I've turned it around. And so I'm going to, I go back. It's like spring break. So it's spring of, you know, 2 years later, and I've got my report card showing straight A's, and I've got my, here's the plan, I'm going to make these amends. And so I sit my parents down at the kitchen table in their house, and they're so happy. They're so happy. I'm sober. You know, I'm being somewhat responsible. Like, they're so grateful. But now I'm going to tell them about this big lie. Can you imagine? And so I sit my mom and stepfather down, and I said, okay, so I'm going to tell you that I need to make amends. And this is what happened. Everything I just told you guys. And I said, so, but here's my report card. And I said, I want to go to college and I want to have a good life and I want to be better than I am. And I said, you don't have to pay my rent. I'll get student loans, whatever you want. And I said, I'm sure you want to talk about it and think about it. And I'll go down the hall to the guest room and let me know. And my stepfather, just to preface it, all the money was his money, right? All the money was his money. And he said, it's okay. We don't have to talk about it. He said, you never have to lie again, Sarah. Right? You never have to lie again. That was my spiritual experience at 2 years sober, being forgiven for a lie I told in sobriety. And like, that's my whole story of recovery is like, yeah, we need to clean up the past, but it's today. I have the biggest spiritual experiences, and I hope to share a couple more before my time is up. We're about making amends for stuff I did sober. Cause that's the stuff I can't make excuses for. I can't blame the alcohol. I know better today. I know I have character defects. I'm full of fear. Like I understand that concept, but I've had to go through the steps over and over and read outside literature and get new sponsors over and over to understand that, you know, like we know or what we're told. I am not a bad person getting good. I'm a sick person getting well, right? I'm not bad, but I think I'm bad, right? Cause I'm lying, cause I'm scared. So that was a pivotal moment for me making those amends. And then, really quick, I just want to talk about being a dry drunk. So I'm going to college and I'm doing really good. And now I'm at San Jose State and I'm doing great. And then my parents move up to Washington. That's how I left California. So I'm 4 years sober. My stepfather says, help us help you. We're relocating to Southwest Washington. We're building our forever home. We love you. We support you. We're proud of you. But help us help you. Move up there. You've got 2 years of college left. Go to college in Portland, Oregon, and you'll live on this property. I'm building this little apartment, you know, because I'm going to live here the rest of my life. And you'll have your own little apartment. You'll have autonomy. And, you know, how do you say no to that? Sure, I'll go. I love a geographic. It's always going to be better over there. Right? Yeah. So, okay, I can check. I made you laugh. And now I'm crying. Maybe you didn't cry. So I've got to talk about God, and then I'll say goodbye. So I go up there. I'm 4 years sober, so dry drunk. So I thought I knew everything, see, because I had done the steps. I'd made those amends, right? I've got 4 years. You guys, I didn't know nothing about nothing. So, you know, it's still early days. It's 1994. I have no cell phone, no internet. And my sponsor, Patty, says, when you get up there, get a new sponsor, get a new home group. Guess who didn't follow directions? School is my higher power, right? And so I went to a few meetings. I was a tourist. We don't use that term here. I have another fellowship. We talk about that all the time. But I was a tourist in AA. You know, I'm a visitor. Thanks for holding the meeting so I can pop in as a stranger, fill my cup a little bit and keep on going. And so I graduated college and I had met my ex-husband. He's a total normie and he lives in Seattle. So Portland to Seattle, it's like a 3-hour drive. So I'm 6 years dry, graduating college with that 4-year degree. I have no plan for my life. He's my higher power. I'm going to move to Seattle and live happily ever after. So I really went out with a bang. I even gave a speech at graduation because I am a big talker. I love the microphone. And so, you know, I'm giving the talk. It was a small college, small private college. And my parents are so proud. They're like, good luck in Seattle. And I get up there and I am a dry drunk. I haven't had a home group or sponsor for 2 years. I don't want to drink and I'm full of character defects. Like my best friend who is 6 months sober, we grew up together since we were 12 years old. She's still in Santa Cruz. Now she's got 6 months of sobriety. She's on fire. She knows everything. And we're on the phone and I'm like complaining, people, places, things, life sucks. Cause see, now I got to be a grown up. Now that I'm out of college, I got to go get a real job and I'm in an adult relationship and I don't know how to do anything. So my friend says to me, she probably saved my life. She said, I'm going to call you in 2 days. I'm going to ask you the name of your new home group and your temporary sponsor. Who does she think she is? I have 6 years. I think she saved my life. And I ran to, well, I didn't run, I drove to a meeting. But I ran to this meeting, it's called Safe Harbor, Wednesday night. I'd been there like once or twice. And there was a woman named Aileen, my second sponsor. And she'd gotten sober in California, so, you know, because we're up in Washington. And she'd gotten sober in California, and she had 18 years. And I was like, this is going to be great. And she was single too. Well, I wasn't single, I had that boyfriend, but whatever. So I liked Aileen. And so she became my next sponsor. And I share this with you all to say, that was a really important lesson for me to learn. When I move, you better believe I'm going to get a home group and I'm going to get a sponsor and I'm going to get a service position. And I really feel strongly about that. So, more on that later. So that was, you know, these were really important moments in my life. And so fast forward, that boyfriend became my husband and, we lived together for 9.5 years. When I was about 10 years sober, we got married. All my dreams are going to come true. So I've got a pretty good job. And he's a normie. He has no drug or alcohol issues. He doesn't really understand recovery. He used to say, can't you just have one? Aren't you cured? No, I'm not cured. And, you know, the beginning of a relationship, he would say, why do you have to go to those meetings? Stay home with me. And at the end, he's like, call your sponsor. Right? He understood. He learned. But so we're together for 10 years. And so halfway through the relationship, we get married and we buy a house. These are all my big, bright ideas. We were adults. We have to get married and buy a house. So you'd think I'd be happy because I got everything I thought I wanted. Because as if I'm not, I can't speak for the gentleman, but as a female of a certain age growing up at a certain time in this country, I was fed a message. This is my opinion. You can argue with me later. But the message I grew up with was, as a female, you need a relationship and you need these certain milestones to happen to be complete. So I really thought I needed a ring on my finger. I needed that spouse. I needed these things to be complete. And you know what I really needed was a relationship with God. That's all I've ever needed. But anyways, so we're living in Seattle and we're, you know, he's working full time. I'm working full time and he's a normie and I'm spinning, you know, I've got a home group and I've got a sponsor, but I'm not spiritually fit. And, so what happened was I, again, didn't know how to address the issue or ask for help. And so at my job, I committed a fireable offense. It's not important. I didn't burn the building down, but it was very preventable. Sorry, you didn't like me talk. Sorry, comedian to me. But it was very preventable, you know. And I, the truth of it is I didn't know how to be an adult in an adult relationship. I mean, that is the bottom line for me. And I, you know, if I'd had a better therapist or a better sponsor, I don't know. I think it's just, I'm just on the slow grow of maturity. And so, when my ex-husband found out, he goes, so you're telling me you got fired and it was 100% preventable. 100%. I was like, yeah. He felt bad for me for one day. And he's like, Sarah, we have a mortgage to pay and I can't pay it on my paycheck. He's like, what are we going to do? And so, you know, the marriage didn't last because I just had a lot of work I needed to do. And so we didn't have children. We got divorced and I'm 15 years sober. I'm 15 years sober. And so I do a lot of geographics. I move, and the economy's not doing very well. And I bounce around. My resume's not looking very good. And I'm moving to different places and I get in these rebound relationships and, oh, he's my higher power and I'm moving to his town. And I'm really messing up my money and my resume. And when you mess up your resume, that then in turn messes up your money because nobody wants to hire you or the job you're going to get is not the one you maybe are qualified for because they're not impressed with your resume. And they don't care if you have 25 years of sobriety and they don't care if you gave a speech at graduation, right? They want to see a little stability and I had none of it. And so, I love a geographic because it's going to be better. I love to be the first day of work, the first day of the relationship, whatever, you know, it's going to be different. So fast forward, I did a really big geographic to Hawaii. I was divorced. We got divorced in 2005. And so I spent 7 years kind of bouncing around Seattle and relationships. And then I moved to another town, came back to Seattle. And so, my best friend, the same friend that helped me, you know, we've been friends since we were 12. She's now living on Maui. You know, we grew up in Southern California with the surfers and the skaters and her now ex-husband was like some famous pro skater and surfer dude. And they went there to fix their marriage because they were both sober. And so she's living on Maui. She's getting divorced. She has a little boy. He's 7 years old. And so she's living, you know, single mom and we're on the phone and she's like, you should come here and be auntie. Come to Maui and be auntie. You never had kids. I'm 42 years old. You never had kids. You always wanted kids. It sounds great. Doesn't it sound great? And AA is great in Hawaii. Let me tell you, it's fabulous, but there's not a lot of jobs. You know, it's not Honolulu. It's Maui. And I've never been a waitress. I don't work in that industry. You know, I was selling jewelry at Nordstrom's. And so, I thought that's a great idea. I'm going to go be of service. And that's the story I told everybody. I told my sponsor, my sponsees. I told everybody I'm going to go be of service to my friend. The truth was it was going to be better there. It was going to be better there. So I moved to Maui and I lasted 3.5 years. And while I lived on Maui, I won't go into it, but during that time I hit bottom and I qualify for a whole other fellowship because there's a lot of ways to not feel your feelings. And I'm sober. Now, just remember, I'm not drinking and I'm not using and I'm going to AA and I'm 25 years sober and I can talk great AA talk, but I have a secret life and I'm broke. And I don't like living with my friend and I move out and I get my own place and I can't afford it. And finally, it's just 3.5 years. I'm done. I have to leave. I can't afford it. And my mom rescues me one more time. It's 2016. So I get my plane ticket, I ship my car, and I come back to my parents. The same place 20 years later, I'm back in that little garage apartment in Southwest Washington. And she goes, you're going to go to the other fellowship and you're going to stay sober and you're going to get a job and you're going to get it together. And so I move home, and in 2017, I got a new AA sponsor. And what I needed to do was make amends to the sponsor that I lied to, really long time. And because she fired me when she found out I lied. I don't want to go. You don't need the trauma. I'm not going to tell you the details. But so she let me go. She says, you know, and it was a long distance relationship because we met in Seattle, and then she moved and I moved, and it's easy to lie on the phone. So it's 2017. I'm in Battleground, Washington, and I have a home group, another home group, and it's a women's meeting, and it's Thanksgiving. And I'm sitting on a couch like this next to a nice lady, and we're in a circle, and I'm crying because my sponsor fired me and life is hard. And a woman sitting next to me says, what's up on the phone? The woman next to me says, I'll sponsor you. I'll help you. And so I went to her house and I told her the truth about everything. And so I was perfectly honest with her. And she said, I'll take you through the steps. I'll take you through the book. And I said, I have to make amends to that woman that I lied to. And she said, when you get to step 9, you can make those amends. So that's another story I just want to share with you, is that making amends to Charlene, that sponsor from Seattle, was a really important opportunity for me to own it, to be a grown up using these steps. And so she took me through the book. This is the book I got. She goes, you're going to get a brand new big book. And she goes, and we're going to go through it. And she showed me. I didn't know there were promises in every step. I didn't know that. There was so much in the book I had missed. And it's nobody's fault. There's nobody's fault. So I got to step 9 and I wrote the letter. And I said, thank you for having the grace to fire me. Thank you. I needed to be called out. And so I work with that sponsor and then another sponsor. And that next sponsor, so this is my math I did last night. I have moved 9 times in sobriety. I've had 8 AA sponsors, and I've had 17 AA home groups. But those include, I still have a few minutes left, those include my 3 current home groups. I am a member of the Women's Solution Group here at the Long Club. I'm a member of Vallejo Fellowship. And I'm a member of the First Street Group. And what membership in a home group means to me is that I go to the meeting every week, and it's on my schedule, and it's a non-negotiable. It's a, because AA has to be the most important thing in my life, or everything else is going to crap, right? And if it's my home group, then I'm going to that business meeting. You better believe I'm at that business meeting because I want my voice heard. And I'm taking a service position. And when that service position rotates, I'm taking another one. And you probably all look at me like, God, she is so extra. But you know what? My life depends on my willingness to stay in this fellowship to the best of my ability. And I don't know how else to stay in the fellowship, because before, remember, I tried it my way and I was a dry drunk. So yeah, the next sponsor I got in when I was living in Battleground, took me through the steps, and I learned things about step 4 that I'd never seen or heard. And it was all in the book, and step 9. And one thing I learned is, you know, for step 9 is moving forward. Now that we have cell phones, never drop that letter in the mailbox unannounced. I was taught by this other woman, which really helped me with these young girls I'm sponsoring today, because we have so much technology. Make an appointment for that 9-step amends. Get permission to deliver it. Right. Yeah. But that other sponsor, Charlene, I did drop the letter in the mail unannounced, but she accepted it, and we're still friends to this day. So fast forward, I have a few minutes left. I just want to talk about the gift of COVID. The best thing that ever happened to me was being locked down in the apartment in Battleground, Washington, with COVID, with Zoom meetings. And so what happened for me, I was part of an in-person women's meeting, that very small group that moved to Zoom, September of 2020. And so I was the OG. I was the one that was there before we were on Zoom. And so all these women are getting newly sober in 2020, fall of 2020. My stepfather dies. It's me and my mom. And I looked at my mom, and I had been his caretaker. He had Alzheimer's and dementia. And I said, should I go get a job at the front line? Remember, we called it the front line then. And she's like, no, there's no vaccine. She's like, your job is to stay and live with me. No more running away. I don't care who you're dating or what you're doing. You're going to live with me, and we'll figure it out. There's enough money. You'll be fine. So she goes, keep doing all that recovery. Keep doing all your recovery. So that's a gift and a blessing. And so, I want to just tell a quick story about, how this other amends story, how it changed my life. So I'm sponsoring a young woman named Annie, And she's brand new recovery. She's 25 years old. And she takes all my directions. And I'd had that really good, that last sponsor that gave me some strong directions on 4 and 9. And so Annie's like, she's on it. And she whips through her steps. And when we got to step, 8 and 9, and I'm just going to say this briefly, and I hope no one is offended, but in my other fellowship, I've looked in the Big Book 100 times. And I've looked in the 12 and 12 100 times. It doesn't explicitly say, I'm just saying, put yourself at the top of the amends list. Maybe your sponsor told you to. Maybe a friend told you to. But it's not directions I ever received, ever. But in my other fellowship, it's in there. Put yourself at the top of the amends list. So Annie knew to do that. Annie wrote a letter when she came to steps 8 and 9 to little Annie. Annie is Chinese. She was adopted as a baby from China. And it's, of her core issues. And so she wrote a letter, dear little Annie. Okay. So she showed me this example of making amends to yourself. So fast forward about 6 months, it's spring of 2021. We're still at home, still on a lot of Zoom. I'm doing a lot of service. I'm doing a lot of commitments, sponsoring a lot of women on Zoom. And I stop working step 10 and 11, and I'm getting full of resentments. Because, I'm running these meetings, and I'm the OG, and I'm the trusted elder, and, you're not learning. People aren't showing up for service. They're newly sober. The world's on fire. It was only early 2021. And so I got a resentment against a lot of people, but the truth was I still hated myself. So that's what I wanted to share with you before I ran out of time. I at that point I was sober 31 years and I still hate myself. I still can't forgive myself. And I'm taking it out on other people. You're not doing your service. You're late for Zoom hosting. Like, no one needs that crap. And so my sponsee shows up on Zoom late and I'm barking at her. I'm barking at her and she goes, I'm out, because she's a grown woman, and she goes, I don't need this garbage. And she gets off Zoom and I'm like, oh my God, she should fire me. I deserve it because I'm a piece of crap. And she didn't fire me. I wrote her a, text. I said, I'm really sorry. You didn't deserve that. And I'm going to talk to my sponsor. This is a 10-step amends, but I owe her much more. And I said, I'm really sorry. And if but I will address this. And this is not about you. And so that night she wrote me an email, and this email changed my life. She wrote me an email. And she's new in recovery, right? And I'm her sponsor, her first sponsor in 12-step recovery. And she said, my sister in recovery, she goes, I'm called to give you grace. She goes, God gave me grace to get sober. And she goes, and I'm going to pay it forward to you. We're all going to lose our shit sometime. You guys, that forgiveness brought me to my knees because I hated myself. I hated my life. I ruined everything. I'm 25 years sober. Why can't I be like Joe and Liz? Why can't I have the perfect marriage? Why is my life so much crap? It's not crap. None of it is. I'm helping women with trauma, but I gotta forgive myself, and I don't know how to do it. So she showed me the light. She was a Christian. She showed me some light. And I called my sponsor and he said, Sarah, where's your step 10? Where's your step 11? I'm like, I'm not doing it. He goes, okay. He goes, you're going to write a 4-step about these little petty resentments that you have, really petty. And he goes, you're going to get back on 10 and 11. You've got to fill your own cup first, right? Fill your own cup. So I do that. And then I write a letter. Dear Sarah, I'm so sorry. I didn't take care of you. And I'm talking about in recovery as an adult. I'm sorry I took you out of that marriage. I'm sorry I took you to Maui. I'm sorry for all the trauma I put you through. And I'll never do it again. And I'm going to spend the rest of my life being a better adult for you. That little kid. And that was really life-changing. And so to fast forward, we moved here. My mom sold the property. And the meetings are opening up. And so she decides at the end of 2022, we're going to downsize. And I loved Washington. I did not want to leave. And she's like, I want to go. You've heard some of my shares. We're going to move to where your sister lives because my sister has a great life. She's married and has a house and she lives in Vallejo. I'm like, where's Vallejo? I knew Santa Cruz. I didn't know Vallejo. I didn't know Benicia. I didn't know South Solano County. So, but mom and I have this agreement and it's the best gig I will ever have. As long as I live with my mom, that's my job. And if she falls tomorrow and breaks her hip, I'm the nurse, okay? That's a good job. Today, you see me. You guys see me in this community. I'm everywhere I can be because she's healthy. So I can volunteer for the holiday party. I can have 3 home groups. So we moved here, bought our place on Mirror Island. Mom's the place she owns and lets me live in. And in April of 2023, so really quick, I have a couple minutes left. I walked into Vallejo Fellowship. I'm like, no bueno. It was on Tennessee Street at the time. And the truth is, you know, it's not the building, it's the people, right? We just talked about that. It's the people. But, I ended up taking a service position there, and, I was central office rep for a year, but I found Women's Solution Group here, and I went to central office, and I got a resentment like we often do, and I got tired of the business meetings and some of the arguing at Vallejo Fellowship, and I was like, I'm out. And yeah, right. I'm out. And so I took a 6-month sabbatical from Vallejo Fellowship. I was going to American Canyon, coming to First Street Group. Anyway. So I want to talk about this last year really quick. How good God has been to me. You know, I'm going to be transparent. All I pray for, God, send me that man. I'm in California now. I'm in the Bay Area. I still look good for my age. And you know what God does? God sends me women. So many amazing women. And friends. And I, for the first time in my life, in AA, I have learned to be friends with a man and not objectify him. Thank you, higher power. And so my friend David A., you all probably know David A., he found me at American Canyon last March, and I'm not going to Vallejo Fellowship. And he said, hey, you know, we're going to do this little fundraiser, and I need a speaker. And I was like, he caught me in a good mood. I was like, you know, say yes. So I said, yes, I'll come to your fundraiser. I had not set foot in that building for 6 months. And I went there, and I was like, what am I afraid of? What am I afraid of? There's nothing to be afraid of. And I talked, and it felt really good. And I was kind of the talk I'm giving today. You know, I was a little, trying to be a little honest, but I'm still just, this is about AA. But I saw there were service positions on the whiteboard. And I was like, I'm going to go to the 7 a.m. because the 7 a.m. early bird, if you ever go, it terrified me. I was like, oh, I'm so intimidated by what? Who knows? And it's all ego, right? So I was like, I'm going to take the service position. I went to the business meeting, and I took a service position, and so I just completed that. And then at one point he said, you know, you need alternate treasurer. The alternate treasurer got a job or something. And so I'm really involved in Vallejo Fellowship. And so, by the way, we're having a Super Bowl party. Please come. So I made that flyer. Anyway, really involved in Vallejo Fellowship, but I'm also still part of this Women's Solution Group. And I actually really like the First Street Group. And so I just took a service position there. And you're probably thinking, God, three home groups? Why not? Why not? You know, and just in closing, I just want to say that, you know, what I really appreciate about Alcoholics Anonymous is our message. And so I know we're out of time. It's top of the hour. But I just got done reading the forward to the first edition Friday night. Please come to our – I know that everyone likes the young people's meeting Friday night. But if you would like to come with us older folks down the street, Friday night, First Street Group, we're going back through. We're going to start the book over. But we read the plain language, and the edition, the forwards are at the end. And so this sentence I love. This is in the forward to the first edition. And it says, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. Well, how'd they recover? Well, later it says, later, I'm such a big book geek. Later, in We Agnostics' favorite chapter, it says, its main object, this book, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem, right? So Bill's getting us to God, right? And then, I love this last part, We Agnostics, page 53. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? You know, and I'm going to choose God today. And I don't care about the pronouns. I know some people, you know, it's fine. It can be a capital H God for me. It's just higher power, and it's love and acceptance. And so thank you for letting me share my story. I'm really grateful to this community, you know, and I'll say this really quick and shut up. I promise this is the last thing. You know, I volunteered for the holiday party. Because I don't like Christmas. My ex-husband and I got married the day after Christmas. I don't like Christmas. And I divorced and I don't have kids. And so every Christmas I'm like, meh, meh, meh. And I heard that we weren't going to have that holiday party as someone stepped up. And I thought, I have the time. I have the energy. I've been part of the committee. I know kind of the idea. I had no idea, though. But that was the greatest privilege, truly, of my service in AA, was that this community trusted me and I didn't screw it up. And I'm going to come back for another time, but I just want you to know, like, and that's what AA taught me, was like, if you don't like something, then be in the solution. So I feel that way. If you don't like your home group, find another, you know, coffee pot and resentment, right? And if you don't like the party, come to our committee. You know, I'll announce the bejesus out of those committee meetings. You know, let's be part of the solution, right? And let's not tear each other down. And I'm the worst. I know I can gossip too. But you know, love and tolerance is our code, and that's my code. And so thanks for letting me share. And that was way too much time. Thank you. Sorry. Thank you.